You are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people who make them and do not necessarily represent the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or any of its affiliates or advertisers. Hi, folks. Welcome to the show. Whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous place we call Earth, thanks for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. Those of you joining us for the very first time, welcome aboard. We're glad to have you. And I think you're going to be delighted that you're here as well. If you have not subscribed to the K-Files e-zine, be sure you do. It's free. There are no strings attached. There's no good reason on God's green earth not to subscribe, all right? You can unsubscribe anytime you want to. You do that by going over to kevinsmithshow.com. Go to my website, and you'll see it. You can't miss it. Just look at the screen. You'll see it. K-Files e-zine, all right? Big red letters. All right. What about 2012. Have you given much thought to it? I know you have, because your questions when you call in, your emails, very often contain references to 2012. 2012 is a subject that a lot of people are really focused on. The year 2012, of course, is a year made famous by the Mayan calendar. And what makes it famous is that's where the Mayan calendar stops. December 21st, 2012. So, a lot of folks are focused on that and have a lot of fears about it. A lot of people have a lot of dreams of that this is going to be a wonderful time. A lot of people have a lot of dreams that this is, or nightmares, that this is going to be a catastrophic time. But any way you slice it, 2012 comes up as a major topic all over this planet. It is a major topic. And that's the topic that we are going to deal with tonight. My guest is Marshall Masters. He's written several books that have to do with this topic, 2012. One in particular really focuses on it. We're going to be talking with him tonight about Earth changes. We're going to be talking about what we can expect as we approach 2012, and what do we need to do to be ready, to be prepared. We hear a lot of people say, just be prepared. Okay, how? I think that is important information, don't you? Now, you know that I do not expect that 2012, that December the 21st, 2012, is going to be the end of the world. And Marshall Masters does not expect it shall be the end of the world either. But he does think that there are some great catastrophes ahead of us. And he's going to be talking with us about those, and we'll have opportunity to talk with him about those. You'll have your opportunity to call in and ask him questions. And please do remember, it is a talk show. that requires people to pick up the telephone and talk. I know a lot of you are in chat rooms and you're chatting with each other, but that doesn't work for a talk show, all right? So when we open the phone lines, we want to hear from you. We'll be back with Marshall Masters right after this. Most of the great music you hear right here on Steel Eye Media Network is supplied by the independent artists from GarageBand.com. If you hear a song you like, go over to GarageBand.com, look it up, download it. You can even buy the group's CDs, in many cases, right there at GarageBand.com. You know, there's never been a better time for you to start your own broadcast. I know there are a lot of paranormal investigators. I know there are a lot of people who are paranormal experiencers who want to have their own broadcast. Well, now you can right here at Steel Eye Media Network. It is within your grasp. You can do it, and we're waiting to hear from you. Give us a call today at 1-800-318-1008. Alien Seeker News has blasted off and is providing a new and important resource for everyone interested in UFOs, aliens, alien abductions, Bigfoot, Chupacabra, and more. Featuring five of the top UFO radio talk shows, lots of information and articles and free forums, Alien Seeker News has launched on its journey to greatness. Go to AlienSeekerNews.com, register for the free forums, and get the classic Flying Saucers Are Real by Major Donald Kehoe as a free ebook. Join today.
This is Charles Hall.
Hi, this is nuclear physicist Stanton Friedman.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Hardcastle.
This is Jason Martell, researcher into the ancient astronaut theory.
You are listening to The Kevin Smith Show, the number one talk show choice of many galaxies.
. 2012 is a big, big topic, as I said. It's a topic that's on everyone's mind. It's a topic that comes up in daily conversation. I have heard conversations between Christians talking about 2012. I've heard conversations between pagans and Christians, and between atheists. It seems that it is a transcendent number, and it's a topic that is on everyone's mind, and it's a topic that our guest knows quite a bit about. Marshall Masters, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show.
Kevin, it's a pleasure to be back on.
Marshall, you, and let me just say for folks that the fact that you're here is a bit of a miracle and very much of a gift for us because, folks, Marshall is recovering from the flu, and but he has agreed to be with us tonight, and we're going to be sensitive to the fact that you are recovering from the flu. But, Marshall, why is 2012 such a big topic, a transcendent topic? It seems to reach across every religious line, every ethnic line. It reaches around the world. People are talking about 2012. So why is it such a big topic?
Yeah, I was just thinking of a term just as you were introducing it. I'm going, this is a trans-pagan topic. Well, first off, I want to ask you a question. At the same time I ask you this question, I'm really asking everyone out there listening to the show right now. Just kind of gather up and be still for a second. I want you to think about this before you answer. We all remember Y2K. We were all worried about nuclear reactors blowing up, airplanes falling out of the sky. And I want you to remember back to 1998, 1999, and how many of you out there had a dream or a premonition about something happening on Y2K?
Well, I know I did not.
And if you ask your listeners out there, they'll tell you the same thing. You know, check your chat rooms. Now, Y2K, you know, what a lot of people don't realize is that Y2K was really a Titanic that didn't hit the berg. There were problems, but not the ones we were taught were the problems. And there could have seriously been some repercussions from that. I know, because I was working with Hewlett-Packard on Y2K technology type projects, and I understood the Achilles heel and what nobody wanted the media to talk about, and the media didn't talk about that. Now, the same thing's going on with 2012. The media is not talking about it. But what's happening that's different between this and Y2K is that it doesn't matter what the media is doing. People are talking about it, just like you said. And not only are they talking about it, here's an interesting thing. After we brought out our book, Planet X Forecast and 2012 Survival Guide, we had a significant shift in terms of finding a new audience of people to talk to us. Before that, I had people from ever since I started reporting on this back in, I believe, 2002, we've had people talking about dreams and visions, two suns in the sky, tsunamis and the such, all across the globe, reporting all kinds of experiences, premonitions. It's a tremendous amount of generalized precognition in many different ways. And this is not something you could say it's a conspiracy, because how could somebody in Japan know somebody in Finland, you know, who knows somebody in Nicaragua, all right? And yet, these are the people, and they're coming to me with their stories, their dreams, their visions, and they're talking about it. But after we brought out the book, the amazing thing was that we found people coming to us who could finally feel free to admit that their parents and grandparents had been telling them about 2012, about Planet X, what's going to happen, and to prepare for it. This is a multi-generational precognition event. And as a researcher, you know, Kevin, I got into this, and I, you know, I'm a geek. I come out of the computer business, and so typically left brain. It's been transformative. I've gone to a right brain approach and look at things. And what I would say is that it has become to me, and the fascination for me is more of that it's an événement sociologique, a sociological event. And it's powerful. And I'm watching this incredible awakening as people are, you know, lighting up. It's like standing in a, I guess, in a dark neighborhood, and then people start throwing on the, you know, the strings of light bulbs around the house, right, for Christmas.
Uh-huh.
You see, they're coming on here, and they're coming on there, and they're coming on here, and they're coming on there. And so I'm watching the neighborhood slowly light up. And it's completely an amazing thing for me as a researcher right now, because, you know, I have to say, thankfully, I guess in a sort of way, is that I do Planet X in 2012 7 days a week. I don't dabble in it. I'm continuously doing research and publishing and writing, and so it helps me to keep my thumb on things. So for the folks out there that are sensing this stuff, and I call them the newly aware, and it doesn't matter what, you know, what, where you come from in life and what you're doing. Something is going to actualize you, or what I call a trigger event. And trigger events happen on a very personal basis. No two people trigger the same way, all right? At least in a precognition sense of sensing this coming on. And that is an interesting thing that I find, because they do trigger in many, many different ways. My personal trigger was back in the 90s. And in 91, I started a travel business, late 91, December of 91, I started a travel business to Russia, right after the fall of the Soviet Union. And during the winter months, I was flying to Moscow and setting up all my packages for my Americans going over. Did a lot of work with universities and such. And so I had to get everything ready. And the flight would go from in San Francisco over the pole to Moscow and at night. Now, it was nighttime going out, but daytime on the way back. And the first trip back that I took, my first winter flight, it was mesmerizing. It was just this pristine, beautiful, unbroken field of white and ice and blue ice and snow and mountains, just as far as the eye could see. And that's from 37,000 feet. But then over the period of the next 7 years after that, I watched it slowly deteriorate. It wasn't, you know, where you had a good year, a bad year, a good year, a bad year, you know, seasonal changes. No, it just progressively worsened until in 98 when I took my last trip over the pole. And I looked out and what it looked to me like was the busted windshield of a wrecked car in a wrecking yard. And when I'm looking at that, and I, you know, and I've been taking an interest in the global warming issue, and of course back then it was still, you know, soundly in the tree hugger wacko stage. But I'm looking at this, and the trigger event to me was asking myself one simple question at 37,000 feet in the back of an Aeroflot Ilyushin 96 jetliner, and that was, do I or do I not believe my lying eyes? And I said, yes, I believe my lying eyes. I'm seeing it. I'm seeing your change below me. And that was what really propelled me into personal research and eventually led to writing and publishing. And so that was my trigger event. I came early. A lot of people are coming much later. And so that's the reason why, when it's talking about it, now, it's the buzz. People are waking up. They're turning on.
You know, I had you were talking about that Aeroflot flight, and mm-hmm. I had visions of me on an Aeroflot. I have flown on those airplanes. I cannot imagine flying one of those that great distance.
I don't wish
to change the subject, but I got to tell you, I was just thinking, man, I could not. I just could not.
You know, actually, the EL 96 is really comfortable.
Is it?
When it's 3/4 empty and you can take three seats and lay across. I mean,
There you go.
So.
Anyway, and I'll tell you why. The reason, the Aeroflot, both times that I've flown on Aeroflot, the overhead was not a closed compartment. The overhead, where you put your carry-on, was like on a school bus. It was just an open shelf. And things kept falling. We'd hit a little turbulence, and things would slide and move and fall. And I did not enjoy that. But anyway, you're to be commended for sticking it out.
I've had bad flights. I can tell you real quickly, I was the one between Moscow and St. Petersburg, and they take off, and all of a sudden I'm seeing hydraulic fluid leaking out of the ceiling, and I call the stewardess, and she says, don't worry, but we put enough in there to get us to St. Petersburg.
Yeah, well, that's kind of what I mean.
Now,
the global warming thing is something that, you know, I've taken a lot of, and I don't, this is no pun intended, but I've taken a lot of heat for the global warming thing. I'm not a person who says it's not happening. I'm a person who says that people are shopping for bread at the auto parts store. They're not looking at what's really the mechanism that's causing this. And the problem, and this, I don't want us to get too much into the global warming issues here, because that's really not what the show is about. It's about 2012, and that's just a part of it. But the problem, as I see it, is if you convince the masses that the problem is A, when in fact the problem is B, C, and D. and the masses go to work trying to solve A, and then it doesn't work, you could have massive chaos on your hands, massive anarchy, when the blocks come tumbling down. And I think that's just not a good service to humanity. I think they need to be told the whole story. And part of the whole story is beginning to hit the news. You know, there have been several articles here recently, Marshall, about that the Arctic ice is melting because of solar activity. Now,
that's
another piece of the story, but it's not all of it. Another piece of that story is because of underwater, under the ocean, volcanoes. And the volcanic activity under the ocean has been increasing phenomenally.
You just hit my hot button. Let me tell you what's happened to me. I caught this flu I have, by the way, on the flight back from Maui, and the wife and I finally had a long overdue vacation, and when we were there, the day after we arrived, the volcano on the Big Island, Maui's just the next one up from the Big Island of Hawaii, the volcano down there had a sulfur eruption. A sulfur venting, steam vent. Now, this was so bad that they had to evacuate 2,000 people from that end of the island. And there was not one but two of these ventings, and it caused cruise ships on the east side of the island pull up anchor and just, you know, book out early because the fumes were just really, really terrible. And meanwhile, while that's going on and causing really, really nasty weather patterns for the rest of the other islands, we learned that there's a quake swarm up off the coast of Oregon, about 600 quakes, and in an area where there are no known subsea volcanoes, and yet this swarming activity with this intensity going up into the fours and fives is indicative of it's a harbinger to a subsea seismic eruption and a volcanic eruption. So these things are happening. We're having strange quakes. And I believe that you absolutely have hit it on the nail. I mean, one of the things that we're finding in our research is that the real big unknown, the real really big risk in terms of natural events that could really slam us are these subsea events, quakes, volcanoes. Good example. Look what happened with the 2004 Sumatra superquake and tsunami.
Well, that's true. And, you know, Robert Felix has written a book called Not by Fire, but by Ice. And, of course, he says that all of this happens prior to the onset of an ice age. You have global warming that heats up to a point that you get massive precipitation, which then produces rapid cooling of the planet, and you get an ice age. And, and he presents documentation from meteorologists and so forth. Now, one of the things that he said was that the weather on this planet comes from the oceans. And he said, can you imagine in the middle of the wintertime if you were to run a bath full of cold water and then just take your hair dryer and your blower and blow hot air across that until it's warm enough to take a bath. He said, you'll never get it warm enough. And he said, the idea that the CO2 is what is causing it is erroneous for that reason. He said, the air blowing across the ocean is not what's heating it up. He said, it's being heated from volcanic activity underneath. And so now he doesn't discount that having CO2 in great quantities in the air is bad. What he says, though, is the big problem is what's happening under the ocean.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, an interesting thing that plays into this, because it, solar activity is really driving here, is that NASA, you know, they announced that the present solar cycle we are in, solar maximum, which will peak in 2012, is going to be of the worst in 400 years of record keeping, some 400 years. And it's going to be half again worse than the last. And the last one was so active that they had to invent a new white class, mega destructive class for solar flares. And however, what I found was interesting, and it was NASA reported it, and it was like a blip that moved right off the edge of the radar. It was almost like, oh, what? Where did that go? And NASA reported that they're already projecting that the solar cycle that follows this current solar cycle, the sun's activity is going to fall way off. And what they're now projecting is in that period of time, around, you know, 2015, I guess, 2016 or whatever, we're going to enter into a mini ice age. And enough where, you know, like it was when the rivers froze up in New York and London, people could walk from one end to the other, or even worse. So what that really kind of, you know, it goes to enhance the credibility of saying, well, you know, if you think about it, you got this massive object, Planet X, coming in from the southern skies, and it's approaching perihelion, closest point to the sun. That's going to create all kinds of poo-doo. But then after that, it's going towards...
That's going to create all kinds... That's going to create all kinds of what?
Poo-doo.
I thought that's what you said. All right. I'll make up a definition for it in my own mind.
Is that
something akin to manure hitting the ventilator?
Yeah, yes, on a cosmic scale.
Yeah, okay, poodoo. All right.
create a cosmic fan and work it backwards.
Yeah, okay. That's a first. That's a first.
There you are.
All right.
And
so the poodoo is coming.
The poodoo is coming, that's right. The poodoo, and what we're saying in our book, is that the worst part of this flyby is going to be in a period of time that is between the object when it crosses the ecliptic. That'll be the beginning of the worst of the time, and then through to where it hits perihelion, its closest point to the sun. And the, you know, when it crosses the ecliptic, that's when you start getting all of the electrical interactions that are going to go on. And the sun is going to be interacting with Planet X. And, you know, for us, what's going to happen for us is really goes back to the three laws of prime real estate: location, location, location. And literally wherever we're going to be is going to drive what that process is going to be for us. And a book that we publish, it's an ancient manuscript. It contains accounts of previous flybys by the Egyptians and the Celts. The Egyptians called it the Destroyer. The Celts called it the Frightener. Now, the Egyptian accounts are very detailed. They tell us it caused the deluge, and it also caused the 10 plagues of Exodus. And scientifically, it's easy to break it down and see that's exactly what happened. And, for example,
Marshall, we've only got about 30 seconds here before we hit a break. So I would like for us, if you don't mind, to hold right there, and we'll pick it up right there and continue discussing the poodoo when we come back from this break. Is that all right with you?
Poodoo factor.
Yeah, the poodoo factor. All right.
You heard it first, right here, folks. Poodoo is coming. All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back from this break, we'll continue talking with Marshall Masters. We're talking about 2012, what's coming, what's causing what we see around us, and what can we expect will happen yet more to us.
Kevin Smith here. Do you have your Kevin Smith Show t-shirt yet?
No?
Well, let today be the day you step into the world of galactic fashion. Visit the Kevin Smith Show online store and get yours today.
Welcome back. We are talking this evening with Marshall Masters, and we're talking about 2012. We're talking about what's coming. What can we expect to happen to us in the years ahead, and particularly in 2012 and thereafter?
Marshall, you're talking some about, you've mentioned Planet X or Nibiru. And that's kind of where we left off. You said the Egyptians talked about this, and they wrote about this, its last passage through here. What did they say about it?
Well, what happens is that, and what they teach us is that when this object is coming through, it's typical of a object that's in a long period orbit. It's not going to be exactly predictable as to where it's going to come, exactly when it's going to come, and the effects that are going to happen on our planet. What they do tell us is that For example, in the situation with the deluge, they have a story of Susuta and Hanok, and it's very similar to the Noah's Ark story. But as they give more detail in the Ark and many of the same dimensions. But what you really come to understand is that there's the deluge, as we think of it, 40 days of rain. Well, no, that's really not what happened. It's more of what we would call the great slosh, not the great deluge. It's a pole shift event, because what they described was that during the deluge, there was a pole shift. Now, during a pole shift, the planet is literally shifting on its axis. And what that's going to cause is that the water being fluid and the land are not going to move together. And so you're like, you're walking with a full pail of milk and swinging it. And so what happens is, the milk is sloshing out the edge of the barrel or the pail. And same thing with the earth, which accounts for why Noah built the ark up on the side of a hill. Now think about a tsunami wave coming in. If you're going to build a huge ark, it makes sense, don't you think, to build it down in the harbor, right?
Well, even if the flood doesn't, think so, yeah.
Yeah, because even if the flood doesn't come, you can turn it into a casino. But but he didn't. And I think if he had done that, everybody would have said, "Well, that's practical." But he built it up on the side of a hill. Now, sure, there's easier access to wood, but that's really not the key issue. That's not why you would build an ark like that. The reason why is, imagine now you've got a 300-foot wall of water that's slamming through. And that's literally what New York is looking at if La Palma goes, if the west face of La Palma goes. And anything that's in the harbor, no matter what it is, it's just going to get ground to pieces. That wave's going to go through like hydraulic sandpaper and just tear everything up. Boom. And it's going to be coming inland. But now it's got to start going uphill. And so by the time this water, which is rushing up with all of this energy, it's going to be expending and releasing this energy as it's moving inland and going uphill. And by the time it reaches the ark, it's going to be coming at the ark not from above the ark, down on it, so that it would crush it. It's going to be coming uphill, and literally underneath the keel is where the water is going to come in first. Lift the ark up, and as a tsunami does, it retreats back out into the ocean. Just take the ark with it. And so that was the reason why, in the story of Susuta and Hanok, which is a story essentially of Noah and the ark, why it was built where it was built. It's a perfect launch point for a catastrophic tsunami. And then when we look at the 10 plagues of Exodus, which is accompanied with the meteorite showers, and all of these really, one of the things we're finding right now is that when we have these red tides, these algae blooms, we can get red algae. It makes the water look like it's blood, all right? Now, one of the things that they discovered is that you have these iron meteorites, and they're full of shrubicide. And the shrubicide is containing an exotic mixture of things. That is, there's iron in there that's going to turn the water red. And go to a brickyard, ask them how they make those beautiful red bricks. They'll tell you, we just take iron, throw it in with the clay. Boom, you get a nice, beautiful red brick. Same thing with the water. But also in the shrubicide, other things that cause massive algae blooms. And these, and you got to keep in mind is that this algae was, life came from algae on the planet. If you follow the evolutionary side of it, Darwinism. And so it's, this is a very, very tenacious form of life. It can live in really awful stuff. Well, all this algae blooms are contributing to the red water, but they're also giving off microcystin, a very powerful neural toxin. And it will kill. It's powerful enough that if taken in sufficient quantities, can kill cattle and humans and anything else smaller than that. Ergo, the fish are dying like crazy from it. The frogs, because it's a highly irritating on the skin, it literally burns the skin in sufficient quantity, so the frogs are getting out of the water. So you take a look at the 10 plagues of Exodus, you can see a lot of this that really goes with these meteorite showers. And what you have to do is take and reorganize the sequence of the 10 plagues and take them out of an allegorical sense and put them into a scientific sense. And then what you have is a scenario that stitches together perfectly and makes absolutely common sense. It goes right through it.
All right, well, let me ask you a question about this Planet X, because it apparently is going to cause a great upheaval in our little neighborhood of the cosmos. So, is it real, and is it coming?
Well, okay, let me just address the question. In your question, you're saying it's going to do that. What we're saying is it's already doing that.
Okay, so you're saying then that it is very real, and it's close enough already that it's producing effects.
Absolutely. Has been for some time. We have been reporting, what we really came together, and I was telling you in the first segment about my flights over the pole and getting interested in global warming, and we wanted to understand what was causing global warming. I mean, and here's this big, this big debate, is it man-made, this, that, whatever. And, between the oil interests and the scientists, there's just no reconciling it. So we just said, well, hey, we don't have a dog in this fight financially. We just want to understand it. So I tell you what, we're not the only planet with an atmosphere in this solar system. What's happening elsewhere? So we went looking in the neighborhood. Every planet that has an atmosphere is showing signs of perturbation. All right. Weather pattern anomalies, X-ray emissions, all kinds of things are happening. It's just like you look at the solar system, the sun is waking up, and everything else is just coming on like banks of light in a movie theater. All right?
You know what? Just a couple of days ago, we understand that solar flares happen when a sunspot explodes. And then you have a flare and often a coronal mass ejection.
Right.
Well, a couple of days ago, there was an explosion on the sun. There was a visible tidal wave or tsunami effect across the sun. They filmed it with the satellites. And
right.
A coronal mass ejection, which is supposed to hit the Earth today.
Mm-hmm.
But there are no sunspots.
We're seeing all kinds of anomalous behavior with the sun. I mean, it's just, it's almost commonplace now to read the reports, and the scientists are going, we didn't think that would happen. Who'd have thunk it? And this is just again and again and again. We're breaking new ground here, all right? And, for example, this current solar cycle started 3 months early. Not only did it start 3 months early, something happened that had never been observed before. We had solar spots, sunspots, all right, that had the polarity from both the previous and the current at the same time. Now, having reverse polarity sunspots at the equator, this has just never happened before. And they're looking at that and they're going, huh, isn't that interesting? All right. And that's how we explain, we just don't know what to say about it, which I'm glad at least science is doing that. They're not trying to find to pontificate on every little thing we can't figure out. They're just willing to say, we don't know. And that's marvelous. That's marvelous. It's a huge step forward. And so these things are changing. We're finding that what we're really, worried about in terms of the sun, and we do in our book, we really feel that the sun and solar flares is the worst natural threat we are facing in the years to come. Yes, we're going to have tsunamis, earthquakes, and so forth, but the worst threat that we face are going to be the solar flares. and because they're going to be really massive. And we see something that is going to happen in that period I was discussing before, when the planet has crossed the ecliptic, the solar plane, it's going to perihelion, its closest point to the sun. A tremendous amount of electrical interactivity, and so we'll see sprites, cosmic lightning. It is going to be a time that, what the Egyptians tell us, is it is a time that is so fearful, so terrifying, that women become barren and men become impotent. In other words, we literally lose the will to procreate.
All right, we have to take a break. And when we come back, we'll continue with Marshall Masters 2012 and what's coming. We'll be back.
Get it all. Become a member at kevinsmithshow.com.
We're talking with Marshall Masters. We're talking about 2012. And we're talking about things that are happening around us now and things we can expect to happen in the future as we approach 2012. Marshall, as we went away, you were saying that I believe it was the Egyptians that wrote that it's so frightening that we lose the will to procreate.
That's right. That's what they say. It's just such a terrifying experience that people are just profoundly frightened. And so they really wanted to convey this information, pass it along, but the Egyptians were really doing it primarily, the whole impetus for this historical record was their defeat at the hands of the Hebrews. And they were just trying, like our own 9/11 commission. The book was, it's not a religious text. It's a secular anthology. Really represents a tremendous amount of research. They went out and interviewed all of the races in the within their trading spheres. And they were looking for the one true God of Abraham. But in the process of doing that, they swept up a tremendous amount of folklore. And then that was combined later on in Scotland with the Celtic text, the Frightener, or excuse me, the Cold Book. And that the Celts had a very, very strong oral tradition understanding of this object, which they called the Frightener. And harbinger signs were given to us. The clearest were by the Egyptians, and it was actually the reason why this ancient text came out. It had been in hiding after the Glastonbury Abbey had been set ablaze. And one of the things that was in there was it predicted the downfall of the Soviet Union. And what it said very specifically was that the nation with the largest navy in the world will, like an apple rotten at the core, collapse suddenly. Well, a lot of people don't realize it, and I'm sure you would know it, but that during the Cold War, the Russians had the largest, numerically largest navy in the world. That was a third larger than our own. And like a rotten apple.
They also had, if I could be wrong about this, and I'm sure that there will be some people who will write in and be give me the facts, but at the time, I think they had the most advanced submarines.
Arguably so. I mean, they have, you know, their whole technology was really, really something else. They were deep diving and fast. So while, you know, we had relative advantages in technology, I mean, they could just simply move through the water at tremendous speeds, carry a lot of firepower. So I agree. And but, you know, they also, just like the Colvin Bible predicted, it was a harbinger event of these times. And they said, you know, they're going to, like an apple, rotten at the core. And the Soviet Union was basically just painted rust. And they collapsed suddenly. The other predictions that were in the Colvin Bible was that it predicted the rise of radical Islam. It said that a faith, a religion that professes peace would go into the four corners of the earth and bring war. And that's not, Christianity professes love. Islam professes peace. This has to be a very clear distinction there. And so that was predicted. It was predicted as a sociological harbinger sign, women's liberation. And it also predicted other events. It predicted the fall either of the League of Nations or the coming fall of the United Nations. But it was interesting. It defined it as a nation that exists to make laws and nothing else and will pass away. And so when you think of the League of Nations and the United Nations, which is just really a reincarnated League of Nations, same thing. So these harbinger signs came out in the Scottish Society that was holding on to it. One of the fellows just decided it was time that it had to come out. And, you know, and a lot of people bash these small secret societies. What they really don't understand is that we have lost so many valuable documents because nobody was protecting them, hiding them away until a day that they could be appreciated and openly shared. And, you know, one of the reasons why the Glastonbury Abbey was burned, all right, was for that reason. And
in the early days, of the Christian Church, the Christian Church was a closed, secret society, and
yes.
they used symbols and symbology to communicate.
Mm-hmm. Right. And, you know, this kind of stuff goes on because people, there's not an open, free, you know, forum. You just can't talk freely. And so that is, the internet is an incredible thing and the ability for us to speak openly and to share ideas and create a global consciousness. And I see that really happening. I mean, I'm fascinated by the fact that I'm corresponding with people all over the world every day, you know, and it doesn't cost me anything but an internet connection. And well, if you look back just to, 20 years ago, wow, I would have had a long distance bill that you could refinance a small country in South America.
No, you're exactly right. And in fact, long distance bills are passe now. There are services, I use one, where it's a flat fee and you have all the long distance you want.
And, that's it.
Yeah. Now, look, there are things yet to happen.
Right.
What's coming?
Well, we're going to see this. The pattern is already happening. People really have to stop and take a look around. We just got a report from Australia, all right? And migratory birds, this is the time of year when all the migratory birds form up on the shorelines and get ready to do whatever they're going to do. Well, what they've been keeping a steady count on that, and they found that 85% of that population has disappeared. The bees are dying. We're seeing, there's so many species going extinct. We have... just right now, NOAA is projecting that our tornadoes, and think about it, one after another, we see these tornadoes going through the U.S. and just tearing it up, right?
That's right. In fact, that's on the news today.
That's right. And I got, and here's the thing, is that according to NOAA, our current frequency of tornadoes, twisters, is 200% greater than the previous 10-year average. All right?
That's significant. 200% is significant.
It is 200%. And, the information is out there. It's not that the signs aren't there already, that you should be able to see it and say, wow, what's wrong with this picture? All right, the signs are out there. The problem is that we got the blinders on. It's pure consumer cognitive dissonance. We are so busy doing our thing every day that we don't want to look to see what's happening around. And it's almost like, the classic scene in the movie Titanic, when Titanic, they're telling everybody get on the life jackets, and the steward's going, oh, don't worry, we probably just threw a prop, He doesn't know anything.
Mm.
But, everyone's fine to take that because they really don't want to, nobody really wants to hear that the ship is sinking.
Well, it is
so
the ship sinking.
The problem.
See, and
the
that's the... Well, I don't know. I'm not sure that it is. And I want us to get into that when we come back from the break. But, there has to be some life beyond 2012. Maybe not. Maybe it's all over, December the 21st, 2012. But we'll get into that. We'll get into that.
No, it is. It's not. But I just want to tell you, it's going to be worth hanging around because it's going to be beautiful afterwards. Let's talk about that.
All right. All right. Now, folks, when we come back after the break, and that's coming up in just 20 seconds or so, but when we come back after the break, we're going to continue talking with Marshall, but we're also going to open the telephone lines. Some of you have been trying to get through. I'm watching the lights blink on the system.
I know you're trying to get through. You want to ask questions or make comments, and we are going to open the telephone lines when we come back. So get ready. Be prepared. I will answer your calls. I'll put you on the air, and you can ask your questions. The telephone number is 1-800-289-1092, toll-free throughout all of the USA and Canada. If you're outside that area, send me an email. Send it to flash@kevinsmithshow.com.
Smith at 1-800-289-1092.
We are talking with Marshall Masters this evening, and we're talking about 2012, the things that are coming, the things that are here. What should we do about them? What can we do to prepare and perhaps to survive? We'll get back to Marshall in just a moment. Let me remind you of a couple of things, and then we'll get right back to Marshall and to our telephone calls. First, be sure that you subscribe to the K-Files e-zine. It's free, and there's no reason why you should not be getting it, all right? You can unsubscribe if you want to later on, but try it out, all right? Go over to my website, kevinsmithshow.com. You'll see in big red letters, K-Files e-zine, and just click on that and subscribe, all right? Secondly, this Saturday night, I'll be in the chat room, And for those of you who are members, be sure that you drop in and let's chat for a while. I'll be hanging out for a couple of hours. And what you do is whatever time that you start listening to this show in your time zone, that's when you need to go to the chat room, because that's when I'm there, okay? All right, let's go back to
Marshall Masters. Marshall, we were talking about, is there life after 2012? We'll get back into that in just a moment, but let's go to the phone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling? Mm-hmm. That is why I tell myself every time, Marshall, I'm not going to put someone on hold during a break. And that's why. All right. All right, so we will open the phone lines again in a few minutes. All right, so what about life after 2012?
Well, life after 2012, the Earth settles down. And what happens is that the food chain is going to re-kick. It's going to start back up again. We're going to have, after the rains have washed the salt off, there's going to be new fertile farmlands. We're going to have a cooler atmosphere. Things will settle down, and this is going to be a massive evolutionary event for us. And so, as a researcher, I'm in it for the species, and I don't want people to think that I'm a end of the world doom and gloomer. There's an end of civilization as we know it, in the sense that we're not going to be this rapacious industrial locust on the Earth. I mean, we're literally consuming resources faster than the Earth can replenish them. And that is going to stop. But as a species, we're going to emerge out of this, and we're going to take a big step forward. I see it as a very positive evolutionary event. You know, it depends on how you want to frame it. You can look at it in a catastrophic, fearful base, or you look at it just simply as this is a time when, the universe is saying, all right, you got to step up, and it's your more noble instincts that's going to get you through. It's the big thing about our society today, particularly today, is that, it's not about doing to others as you'd have others doing to you. Our society is turning into one where we say do unto others and declare dividend.
That is unfortunately true. All right, yeah. We're going to try to go back to the phone line. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, this is Trey in Atlanta.
Yeah, Trey.
Yeah, I wanted to make a comment and then ask a question, especially since we got a 2012 guest here tonight. First comment was about the global warming thing and the whole talking about the cycle, different cycles. I think that the reason we have global warming is because we live on a planet that's alive. And if we didn't have global warming, the planet would be dead and we wouldn't be here. The planet creates an amount of CO2 that is immeasurable on its own. Forget about us. What we're doing is throwing sand on the beach, because for the 2002 study, the uncontrolled coal mine fires in China, which have been burning probably for a century because they can't put them out or don't, produce 360 million tons of carbon dioxide a year, which is equal to all the carbon dioxide of all the cars and trucks in the United States. And this is just one coal fire in China. This isn't even talking about swamps with all the marsh, the peat, and all the gas they produce. And the fact that every animal and plant on this planet expels it and has always done so, but it doesn't make sense that it is so bad for the planet, because the planet wouldn't be 4 billion years old with all these different life cycles. If CO2 was so bad, then the planet would be destroying itself, and that doesn't make sense.
Okay, did you have a question?
Yes, I want to talk about 2012, and I want to ask him, there's a difference between a cosmic event coming up, which would result in floods, and that seems to me to be different than the prophecy about us losing control of the planet in the Bible in 2012, then God coming back 100 years later, do you think these two stories fit together? If we're going to lose control
of
the planet...
Well, Trey, first, in order for the stories to fit together, one of them has to be there. The one you just described is not in the Bible.
Well, you mentioned in Revelation that we lose control of the planet.
We lose control of the... Revelation talks about us losing control of the planet in terms of a one-world government.
Yes. Okay, that talks about the government.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the government, we the people, lose control of the planet. We lose control of freedom.
Okay. So my question is, how does this fit together with some kind of a really bad catastrophe? Because if we have the sea levels rise a mile, well, then we're talking about not much of a planet to live upon, to control. I don't see... You know, there's not going to be a lot to control. If you've got a super volcano going off, there's not going to be a lot of government going on, is what I'm saying. If you've got all these huge volcanic events, I don't see how that fits together with anyone, you know, having any kind of government.
All right. What do you think, Marshall?
Well, I think let's focus on the word that he used more often than any other word, control. And I think for us to think that we can control this earth is, it's humorous, all right? We're fleas, all right, on an elephant. And the elephant can just, you know, roll over in the water, and that's the end of us. So what are we really controlling? I mean, this is what the whole lesson of what we're about to learn here is that this is not about controlling the planet or controlling other people. It's not about domination, submission, manipulation, exploitation. All of these come out of a mindset of fear and control. And I can tell you that what our research is indicating is that the people that are going to be the least likely to get through this event are the people that are going to approach it with fear. And control, dominance, all of these negative issues have to have control. The people that can just simply be in the present, be at one with it, and go in a service to others mode. You know, they're just trying to work with others, like-minded, peacefully, get through as best as you can, pull together. And these are the people that are going to be more likely to get through it. This is a natural weeding out process. This is a process where nature is going to say, those of you who have the courage to love your neighbor are going to have a better chance of getting through this than everybody else that's trying to screw his neighbor.
All right?
I hate to be so blunt about it, but that's really what we're seeing. All right? And so this is, it's less about what you put in your bunker, Kevin, and more about what you put in your heart.
All
and
right,
that is the real secret to getting through this whole thing. So, you know, you got to take a huge step back. And if you're fearful, you really are cutting yourself off at the knees.
All right, let's go back to the phone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, yes. This is Kevin from Iroquois Falls, Ontario.
Okay, Kevin.
And hello there, Marshall. How are you?
Just fine. How are you?
I want to know, have we had any extraterrestrial advice on how to get through all of this? Like, have some of the crop circles that we've been seeing throughout the years, have they been messages from them? Because I see in a lot of the crop circles, they show images of the solar system, but with 12 members in it. You know, and I think some of those members are actually Planet X, Nibiru, whatever they want to call it.
I agree with you. I think I've been studying crop circles extensively. And then, you know, around 2003, the government's really cracked down on the crop circle activity. And so we were having some really sophisticated circles. Remember that one with the extraterrestrial holding the disc?
The message that was in it? Yeah.
Right. As a matter of fact, that inspired me with a fellow by the name of Maurice Osborne, and after interacting with him, and I started the Sagan Continuation Project. And so we're actually beaming
reply to that constantly. Every time somebody accesses one of my web pages, I have it at the bottom of the page. You go to the bottom of the page at yowza.com, and you'll see the Sagan Continuation Project reply message at the bottom of every page. And I'm just waiting, you know, because that's going out. Is it the internet is using satellites and all that's getting broadcast out there? And if they're looking for recurring pattern, you never know. And I do believe that there are a lot of extraterrestrials, not just one or two, but I mean several races that are involved for any number of agendas. I mean, from a cosmic standpoint, as far as ET is concerned, what's going to happen to us in 2012 is the next best thing to pay cable. You know, everybody's got a stake in this thing. All life in the universe is connected. And so we're going through an evolutionary event. You know, what we really have to understand is that we're capable of much, much more than we give ourselves. We do so much to suppress our own natural abilities. And I think that this is a process. It's an it's a difficult process. It's going to test people, and you either rise to it or you don't rise to it. But this is going to be an evolutionary event. I think that on the back end of 2012, we're going to see the emergence of what we're going to go from Homo sapien to Homo superior.
Well, that's good news.
Yeah, I think it is. I'm in it for the species.
I'll tell you, I meet a few folks every week who believe they've already made it.
Yeah, well, I mean, there are those that do. And there are early folks that are coming on, and we're seeing more and more people that are, you've heard of the indigo children, the crystal children.
Mm-hmm.
This is really an indicator of direction where they're going. These kids are very intelligent. They have a very they're very centered in their life mission. They're, you know, in terms of our society, they're square pegs and round holes. You know, we're always trying to bang them in there using, you know, psychotropic drugs. But these kids are really a harbinger sign of what's happening. I just feel that the solar activity is just within the human genome. All right. They say, well, we've mapped it. We know what we have. Well, we've mapped about 3% that forms proteins that turn into eyes and skin and stuff like that. And then that's called coded DNA. But then there's all this uncoded DNA. And for a long time, geneticists would do what scientists typically do with things that they don't understand. They label it as junk. So this is all junk DNA. It's kind of garbage we've just been carrying on from when we were reptiles or something. Who knows? No. No, that's not the case. I think everything that we're capable of being is in us already. And what's happening with this solar activity that's being triggered by this planet coming is that radiation does cause mutation. And so what's happening is that there's a natural element here. We're going to evolve not because we all sit around and hug each other and go kumbaya, all right? No. What's going to happen is the sun's just going to pelt us with a lot of radiation. And there's a part of us that's buried deep that, good Lord, I mean, it's primordial, you know, panspermia, if you will. And this is going to be awakened. And what we do know now about uncoded DNA is that it does modify the behaviors of coded DNA. That's been a huge discovery in the last few years by geneticists. And so these things can awaken and bubble forth. And that's the reason why I look at us in this evolutionary event as this is, I call us the popcorn people. You know, you go to make popcorn, you put the pot on the stove and you start shaking it, right? And you start hearing pop, 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 pop,
mm-hmm.
pop. Next thing you know, boom, it just goes pop, 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 pop. And then after a while, it stops popping. And, you know, there's always going to be those kernels at the bottom of the pan that, man, you could cook them until they're cold. They're never going to pop, right?
Yeah, but, yeah. Good analogy. Excellent analogy. Let's go back to the phone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Brent from Wyoming.
Hey, Brent.
Hey, Kevin. I missed the first few minutes, so forgive me if I
ask a question you've already answered. I'm going to hang up after I ask it, but what I'd like to know is what your opinion is of what will be happening with the annual meteor shower in August and September as 2012 approaches. And I'll hang up.
All right. Thanks for the call, Brent. Yeah, go ahead, Marshall, if you have a comment.
Well, you know, on the annual meteor showers, I would say that, you know, that's pretty much going to go on as it is. What we're going to see, though, and I think that he's touching on what we would definitely be, we call this the big trigger.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because it's, if you've ever had, have you ever had Ed Dames on your show?
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, I'm sure Ed told you that what they're seeing with their RV work is that we're all going to know we're in the poo-doo. once a space shuttle or the IIS is taken down by meteorite showers. And we see that. We also see that even before that happens, what we're going to start noticing is a degradation in our telecommunication networks. Our cable television. Right now, you know, we've got 150 channels of the same 10 things that were started out, right? You know, clones of clones of clones, and kind of run like Star Wars, right? But what will happen is that these satellites are out geosynchronous orbit, much further out, and they're going to start getting pelted. Now, these things have got, you got a bird and they'll have many different transponders on it to handle all these different channels. And these birds are either going to get hit by one good whopping rock and that's the end of it. Or what's more likely is going to happen is initially it'll be micrometeorites that start taking out these transponders. Maybe the audio channels will start going, or a video channel, and this, that. And then they move it around, and they have to reallocate it, and the channel could disappear. But we're going to start seeing a period where we're losing cable TV channels, and we're going to get back to about where it was in the 70s, where we had around 38 channels or so. And that's what we're going to start seeing, and that's going to cause awareness. People are going to go, wow, why? You know, why are these things disappearing? Now, they can pick up the slack with fiber optic cables and all of that. There's going to be scrambled disruptions, and that's what we're going to notice most. We're going to notice deterioration in service, less service available, more interruptions of ongoing service, and it's going to be a progressive pattern. And then, you know, that'll happen, but definitely when you have something, if the International Space Station takes a whopping big hit, and it comes down, that's when it's a Katrina-class event. Think about, you know, global warming. For 15 years, the oil lobbyists were able to keep, you know, deflecting the conversation so nobody ever wanted to look at earth changes. Well, then came Katrina, and we went, hold on a second, what's wrong with this picture? And there was a perceptible shift. So it's these kind of things. It's these triggering events. You know, the question is, do you see it, you know, do you see it early or do you see it late? A friend of mine was just in China with her boyfriend, and they came off the plane. This Chinese doctor was just checking everyone's pulse, put his hand to test it, was doing, closed his eyes. This Chinese physician said, you have advanced arterial sclerosis. You need help. And he came back to the United States. Sure enough, he found out a massive blockage. Never felt it coming. This man could just simply, when taking a pulse, could tell him it was so sensitive, so attuned that he could spot that. Here, it took thousands of dollars of tests to do the same thing. All right. The question is, are we going to be as sensitive to what's happening in the world as that Chinese doctor was just by taking a pulse? Or are we going to wait for the technicians to roll out thousands of dollars worth of test results before we're going to buy into it?
You know, Marshall, let's go back to the phone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. It's Debbie from Columbus.
Hi, Debbie.
Hi. Good evening, Marshall. Interesting program tonight. Definitely what you're talking about with 2012 is happening. I work in alternative health, and I'm an energy worker, and There's a lot of stuff going on in the what most folks would call the New Age community. Lots of folks are starting to awaken to what's going on. I've been awake for a better part of my life due to two UFO contacts. And people have to change. I mean, folks are starting to slowly come around, but hopefully it's going to be before it's too late, because as you were saying, there's going to be quite a number of people that are not prepared for what's coming, and they're going to fall by the wayside. My job as an old soul is to try to help not only get myself prepared, but other folks of like-mindedness to be ready for the changes.
Yes. Well, we have a lot in common then. It's good to hear your thoughts, and we need a lot more folks out there like you.
And what you were saying, that we have to start caring for one another, and that's where it all starts at. And
yes.
This is what these visitations from our star brothers and sisters are trying to tell us. Not all of them are evil. Many of them are... Quite a number of them are actually very benevolent and very wise, and they want us to try to get along with one another. So instead of becoming a planet of warmongers, we become the peaceful planet. And once that happens, the entire vibrational level, not for just individuals, but for the Earth Mother herself, is going to raise.
I agree. I mean, this is we have to really make a very conscious decision here. You know, I call it the cosmic, there's only two ways to swim in the cosmic river of life. You either swim downstream towards fear, or you swim upstream towards creator.
Right.
And that's it. And one direction is fear, the other direction is love. And I'm not saying it because I'm trying to be some kind of New Age kumbaya guru. I'm saying it as someone who's come at this thing with a very rational left-brain approach and trying to understand it and going, what is going to be the number one survival skill for people? I can't go out. You know, you want to go out and build a bunker? Go. There's plenty of places that will give you that information on the Internet. In our book, we teach you how to have a strategy, how to move with a 30-pound pack and get out of harm's way with scoop packs, safe havens, and how to read the signs. You know, it's more about what's between your eyeballs than anything else. But the thing that's important is that it's when folks are in a disposition of love, caring for those around them, all right, what that does, the way it empowers you, is that you see the world all as it is at once. People that are dealing from a basis of fear are like little 35-millimeter cameras. They got a zoom, focus, frame. I want to see this. I'm afraid of that. I want to take this. I want to steal that. I want to buy this. I want to do that. And so they're constantly, like these little 35-millimeter cameras, zooming around in life. And meanwhile, in the background, there's this moving blur, but, you know, it's a blur in the background, so who cares? Well, then next thing you know, they look up just before the monster eats them.
That was the moving blur.
Now, that is if you're looking at the life through the negative aspects of fear. Fear, control, manipulation, domination, subjugation, all of these fearful aspects. All of them are some shade of fear. But if you're looking at the world with thought of love, that doesn't mean that, you know, you just go out, you know, beat up on me because I love you. No, that's not what I'm saying. But you're going at it with love. You have compassion for those around you. You know, it's just simple things. Just do unto others as you'd have others do unto you. You want to help those around you. You want to be in service to others. And when you are doing that, when you have this paradigm of love, what happens is you're not like this little 35-millimeter camera that's got to be zooming near, far, and in between. You just look out and you see everything in front of you. It's all clear. The near, the in-between, the far, it's all out there. You can see the threat out there.
And then with a camera, that's called focusing it on infinity.
That's right. But it's infinity right up to you and beyond. You see everything. You know, I mean, it's something where you can see the threats coming, and then, you know, in fear, you go and confront it. But in love, you just go, it's a big universe. If it's going to the right, I'm going to go to the left. And just go around it.
All right, we have to take a break. And when we come back from this break, we'll continue with Marshall Masters, and we'll take your calls. To those of you attempting to call in right now, you know, I had gotten where I would take calls during the break again, and then somebody burned me. So no calls during the break. I will begin answering them right after this break. Most of the great music you hear right here on Steel Eye Media Network is supplied by the independent artists from GarageBand.com. If you hear a song you like, go over to GarageBand.com, look it up, download it. You can even buy the group's CDs, in many cases, right there at GarageBand.com.
Call Kevin Smith at 1-800-289-1092.
My guest is Marshall Masters, and we're talking about 2012, the things that are coming, the things that we're already seeing, and what we need to do to prepare.
Marshall, what I'd like for us to do, I've got some flash messages here from around the world. So let me read these, and we'll try to get through all of these. I don't, let's see, I've got one, two, three, four, five of them. I don't know that we'll be able to get through every one of them. It may be an involved answer, but we'll try to get through all of them.
Well, I'll keep it as quick as I can then, so, because I'd like to cover as many as we can.
Okay. This one from Australia, Phil writes, if I understand things, Marshall has said previously that Planet X comes around every 26,000 years or so. When he talks about the Egyptians describing it, when were they describing it? Also, how does that correspond to the current estimated age we have for the Egyptian civilization?
No, I never said 26,000. He's got that probably confused with people talking about the great year. That's when we're crossing the galactic plane, which is what the Mayans are really talking about, and we're coming up through the densest part of the galaxy. I mean, 2012 is a confluence of all kinds of things happening all together. We didn't get into this trying to validate the Mayans. We just simply arrived at the same place. There it is.
Okay. This one from the UK, from Mike in Scotland, and he writes, has there been any definitive pictures taken of Nibiru? I mean, taken by amateur astronomers. One would assume that with all the amateur astronomers out there, that most celestial discoveries are made by amateur astronomers. One of them would have spotted Nibiru. This being the case, it would surely be impossible to keep something like this quiet.
Well, amateur astronomers are usually, you know, their big claim to fame is that they're picking up comets as they come inside the orbit of Jupiter. We're talking about imagery that really requires deep pockets astronomy. This object is inclined to the ecliptic. It's coming up from the south. What people have to realize is that even with our professional observatories, academic observatories, 90% of all observations are within the 12 signs of the zodiac, or the plane of the solar system. And then the other 10% are divided between northern and southern skies. And keep in mind that about only 3% of the observations are in the south. If you're looking at all the observatories, concentration of amateur astronomers and so forth, all of that is above the equator. Well, this object is nowhere near visible to anybody that's above the equator. As a matter of fact, it's only really visible right now to the South Pole Telescope. Now, we broke on Yowza.com the story about the South Pole Telescope. We believe it's the perfect instrument at the right time, at the right place to observe a red dwarf or a brown dwarf coming in from the south. And we also have documented extensively on images that were leaked by a fellow by the name of Nibiru Shock 2012 on YouTube. If you go to the site, yowza.com, and you follow that analysis, you know, there's a lot of stuff out there, sun dogs, and people have all kinds of things, and they seem to catch a lot of attention. But the only real credible early leaked images were the ones that really go back to this guy, Nibiru Shock 2012. And we find him to be highly credible after going through a lengthy process. We've done an awful lot of analysis on it. And it's just one of those things where folks are just, it's not terribly captivating about that. I guess it's our analysis, our research on it takes such a academic approach to it, and breaking it down, it just doesn't seem to hit a mainstream thread. But go look on our site, right on the homepage. You want to start looking at images of this object, and it's a red dwarf, which means it is occluded by a dust field. It's not going to be observable until it's well inside the orbit of Jupiter.
All right.
And so there's your answer.
From Germany, what is Marshall's opinion about the galactic center and our approach to it? I missed the first hour of the show. Well, you just sort of addressed that a little bit in the first answer you gave. But what about that, the galactic center and our approach to it?
Well, that is something that really factors in. We're going through a part of, when we're crossing through the galactic center, we're going through a part of space where young, big suns tend to go poof, all right? And we could very well just be find ourselves passing through an area of space where there's all these debris bubbles left over from previous supernovas. This is, the Mayans were really specific about this alignment. And also, if you had seen the Lost Book of Nostradamus on the History Channel, and they analyzed that, and Nostradamus gives the same exact alignment for 2012. And what was really interesting is I believe Nostradamus is predicting a pole shift, because in that the last graphic does not show any alignment lines. If you have a pole shift, our reference to the celestial sky changes. Therefore, he couldn't create any alignments. And so I think there's a very powerful message there. 2012 is just, we're going through a window, an envelope of a time-space continuum, if you wish. And there are a lot of different factors that play into it. It's not going to be one thing.
All right. Our last one from Philip says, if I understand your guess correctly, does he mean that we will become Homo superior like the X-Men and the TV series Heroes, where our genes are awakened and we gain amazing abilities?
No. I think what we're going to become is our power, extrasensory powers are going to enhance. We're going to become calmer, peaceful, more loving people. We're going to be a more noble species. So I don't see the X-Men thing happening where we're that's happening. Although there, you never know. When we're evolving, we're evolving. We could wind up, you know, looking like orange baseballs.
Well, you know, you've been through the poodoo then.
Yeah, boy, I tell you, that's got to be tough. So we have to see it, but I think it's mostly this is it's how we see the world around us. And also keep in mind, this is going to be a point in which the governments can no longer restrain the free and open contact between other races and us on a broad scale basis. Now, we're in a country where 70% of the people believe in UFOs, and yet, if you see one, the first thing you go is, oh, God, I don't know if I want to tell anybody, right? Because the humiliation machine is so powerful out there. So the point here then becomes, once we are in this broad-scale contact, and we realize that we're just one species of many species inhabiting the cosmos, that we're not alone, furthermore, we've never been alone, and we never will be alone. And that is going to be a life-altering experience for us as a species. It's going to be a zeitgeist event, and that's going to propel us forward. You know, in my video, Surviving 2012, I have a five-part video. If you go to the video section on my yowza.com site, and that there's about 30 minutes of video in five different programs, and you step through that, and it's really going to give you a broad brush picture. But what we really do see is literally the Gene Roddenberry's vision of the future. That's where we are going. It will be a Star Trek future, folks. Not with the Borg concept that came after Roddenberry. I'm talking about the original Roddenberry concept.
All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and where are you calling from?
Hi, Kevin. This is Mark from Nashport, Ohio.
Yes, Mark.
First, I got to say hello back to Debbie, since I'm an Ohio person. But anyway, Marshall, how many people do you estimate will lose their life because of the 2012 event?
Well, the loss of life estimates vary depending on who's doing the research. They vary anywhere from half of the global population to as much as 99%, depending on who you talk to. I think that what you have to keep in mind with that is there are a lot of people that are going to die needlessly. They're not going to be prepared. This is going to catch them flat-footed. They're going to be blindsided. Think about Sumatra. That's, I keep going back to that example. And when this, you know, that superquake and tsunami, and the natives, the ignorant, stupid natives understood the minute the ground shook, and they were heading uphill screaming, "Feet don't fail me now." And all of us educated, civilized, intelligent people with cars and money and education were going, "Oh, honey, isn't that interesting? Get a wicker basket, we'll pick up the fish." All right? And we drowned like rats. Well, what I'm trying to convey to people, and you had an earlier caller, a nice lady that called in, and it's the same message, is that this is about choice. You choose, doesn't matter how many victims are out there, you choose to be one of them or you choose not. And if you're aware, then you know where to go. You're intuitively going to, you know, you're intuitively going to find yourself the safety.
All right, we have to take a break. And when we come back, we will be on Final Approach, but we will take your calls when we come back from this break. Don't go away. Get it all. Become a member at kevinsmithshow.com.
Call the Kevin Smith Show at 1-800-289-1092.
Welcome back. We are on final approach now. That means that we only have a few minutes left before the end of the show. We do have a caller on hold, so Marshall, let's go straight to the telephone. Caller, your first name and where are you calling from?
Doug here in Canada. Kevin, how are you this evening?
Outstanding, Doug.
Great. Marshall, great to have you on Kevin Smith's show. Actually, I had fast blasted Kevin about a week ago about you. I purchased your books, I purchased your audios, and you know, you've got me hooked like a fish. I'm telling you.
Well, thank you.
What I've done with my own research on the internet, just like everybody else can, is come up with what you've discovered. But you've compiled this in such a fashion that is absolutely astounding. Anybody out there does not have a copy of this man's books or his audios, I recommend you get out there and get them, because it's going to make your mouth hit the floor. One thing I have to ask you, Marshall, though.
Sure enough.
Can you possibly shed some more information in regards to your theory in regards to the parting of the Red Sea? Because there really isn't much when it comes down to evidence in that. Is that just a hypothesis of yours in regards to, like, I'm a believer. I'm a UFO sightee and all that kind of stuff. And I do believe that that could be possible. But how are you going to tell the public on that?
Well, what I can tell you about the Red Sea is what the Egyptians say in the Colburn Bible. And the way they describe it, what we found is that the parallels between the Hebrew account and the Egyptian account are very close on a number of issues. The waters parted. There was swirling on both sides. It was formation of a land bridge. They didn't explain exactly what caused that. There could have been any number of theories about that. What the Egyptians do say was that they intercepted the body of the host that Moses was leading across the land bridge and slaughtered approximately 60% of the Hebrews and the Egyptians that were going with them. They were trying to work their way up from the back. And that was when the waters returned. And Pharaoh, who at that time, the Pharaoh of Exodus, was leading that charge, and that was a very brutal, bloody event, he died along with the army. And then following that, the Egypt was invaded from the south, probably from Sudan, because the way they describe it, this was a vast regional impact event. They don't describe it as a fight, if you will, between Pharaoh and Moses, and, you know, punishment for a hard-hearted God, or for a hard-hearted Pharaoh, excuse me. They describe it simply as this was an event that occurred with the flyby of Planet X, Nibiru, or as they call it, Destroyer. And Moses, you know, he was very high-ranking. He was a prince of Egypt. So he had these ancient secrets. And they also had innumerable texts that went back to the ancient stories as well, previous flybys. And so he knew that this planet would be coming. And I believe that what Moses did was he timed this event around the return of Planet X. He saw the signs and knew that, you know, in chaos, his opportunity would be a good time to get the Jews out of Egypt. Hmm. So that's my take on it.
You know, one of the things that people often forget about Moses is that he was raised to be Pharaoh. He was trained in all of the education and all of the wisdom of the Egyptians and in the religion of the Egyptians.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I mean, to me, Moses is a very tragic figure because he was torn. He was a part of the royal family. These people loved him. He grew up with them. I think it's the reason why what I find is interesting is in the Bible, in the Hebrew account, and in the Egyptian account, the name of Pharaoh is not mentioned. Now, people have all kinds of theories who it was, all right? But the fact of the matter is the two texts that document that event specifically avoid giving the names of the royal family of Egypt at that time. And I think that, you know, when he watched When we watched Israel, watched the Jews go into the Promised Land, went up to Mount Nebo, I think it was okay. I did it. I did it. I got it done. I got my bloodline across there. I got my people across there. But I think he wanted to have the last of his life to mourn the loss of the family that he loved, that he was forced to betray to do a higher good. You know, this is the same kind of pain that we in the Civil War with the North versus the South, and families would be divided and brothers would kill each other on the field of battle. These things event, and so he was a very tragic, very tortured figure.
Yeah, and that's part of the story that I think doesn't get much play, and I think it should, and I'll tell you why I think it should. Because it is the part of the story where he's not this bigger-than-life guy. He's just you and me.
Yeah. Yeah, he could be, you know, that's exactly it. The bigger in life is, that's the Hollywood. You know, that comes afterwards with the special effects. But otherwise, you know, we never know who's going to do something that's going to be immortalized in history and become powerful. We're just people that the universe comes and taps us on the shoulder. God says, you know, okay, this is for you. You either stand up and do it, or you spend the rest of eternity going, well, I chickened out. And he didn't chicken out.
Even Jesus in his day was mm-hmm. viewed by the wider population as just a insignificant rabble-rouser. But look what came of that.
You know, it's today he would be... it's hard to say how he would be viewed today. If he came, you know, would all the attention be paid to him? It's an interesting thing, and I can only say that this is something I'm sensing and feeling. But part of his coming when he did was really to plant a seed. It was a preparatory seed in anticipation of this evolutionary event. It was something that just needed, like it takes hundreds of years for a redwood to grow up, all right? It took us thousands of years. And that was his purpose in coming, was to plant that seed, to give a concept, to give some ideas. And there's it almost makes me feel, I hope it doesn't insult any of your listeners out there, but it really makes me feel that he's really undersold.
Well, yeah. While we on this show, I don't get into religious dogma. However, the fact of history is that this guy named Jesus did exist. It is a fact of history that he split the calendar, perhaps unintentionally, but the calendar is divided, BC and AD. And, the world revolves around this guy. And so I don't think we should be... I don't think we should be dismissive. I think we ought to pay attention to what was actually being said and what was going on, and take a wider view of things.
Yeah, I've referenced before the Colburn Bible. There are two biographical sketches of Jesus in the Colburn Bible in the back of the book that were written by the Celts. This biographer actually met Jesus and the Holy Family and the family and his family. And what's interesting to note is that the Celts, who knew Jesus personally, called him Lord and Master.
I hate to do it, but guess what? We're out of time. Folks, don't you wish we had another hour to go? Wouldn't that be something? Well, maybe someday. But today I have to say, Marshall Masters, thank you for being with us. Stay on the line with me. Ladies and gentlemen, my friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too, and you can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. I'll be back tomorrow. You be here too. Until then, so long, everybody.